Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to all of our Tenpenny Files premium members here found on Podbean and also available on drtenpenny.com. You can find the direct link by going to drtenpenny.com and clicking on the podcast tab at the top of the page. During our deep dives, we want to have a conversation with our guests about what inspires them and find out a little bit more about who they really are. So let me introduce to you today's guest, Dr. Peter Glidden, a thought leader in the naturopathic field. He is an outspoken advocate for holistic medical therapeutics. Dr. Glidden brings 32 years of clinical work as a licensed naturopathic doctor to bear on all of his public presentations, online information, podcasts, private consultations, and books. There may be no other licensed naturopathic doctors in the entire world. He said that on his website, and I tend to agree with that. That brings to the forefront his level of experience, speaking the truth to medical power in the public forum and on social media. The author of two books, Everybody is Sick and I Know Why, and also Attempt a Cure with Holistic Medicine, Dr. Glidden's private consultations and online self-help health recovery information has helped thousands of people to restore and recover their health, often in very remarkable waves. So Peter, welcome to the Deep Dive with Dr. T. I can't wait to hear a little bit more about some of the things that we've talked about online here. And I want to start with, where did you grow up? And what was that like in your childhood?
I had the best childhood ever. I was the youngest of six. Three brothers, two sisters. Youngest of six by 6 years, I was tail end Charlie. My mother was a devout Roman Catholic. I was this close to becoming a Catholic priest when I was in high school on Nantucket Island, which is 30 miles south of the southern coast of Massachusetts. It's the southernmost point of Massachusetts. And when I was there, there wasn't airplane service to the island until I was 9 or 10 years old. It was a 2.5, 3.5 hour boat ride to get to the mainland. We took a trip to the mainland maybe once or twice a year, and that was a really big deal. I don't think I saw a stoplight until I was 10 years old and took my first trip off island. It was an idyllic place to grow up, really, really idyllic. Like, picture a Norman Rockwell, New England town, 30 miles out to sea. It was fantastic. There were about 7,000 people that lived there year round, about 100,000 people in the summer, with 2,000 or 3,000 day trippers. It was like a circus carnival atmosphere in the summer. Beautiful beaches, beautiful water, scuba diving, sailing, fishing, hunting. I mean, it was flipping fantastic. I had a really, really great childhood, and I was blessed to have parents who were extremely open-minded. You know, I told my parents, I was 12 years old. No, 11. I was an avid reader. There was this little library of 5 blocks away from my house. I basically lived there as a kid. And I became interested in transcendental meditation. I'm 11 years old. I told my folks I want to do a transcendental meditation course. And they looked at each other and looked at me and said, okay. They let me do it, right? It was like that. It was kind of laissez-faire, do whatever you want to do as long as it doesn't hurt anybody type of a deal, which was boded really good for me because I've always been kind of an outlier to the social norm. I was blessed to have parents who were very supportive no matter what.
And then how did you get interested in becoming a naturopathic physician?
Well, really interesting story. So I graduated pretty high in my high school class. I think I was number 3. Got into a really good college, Williams College in Northwestern Massachusetts. And again, a very idyllic place to matriculate in college. But I only lasted a year and a half there. I was a religion major. I was wasting my father's money. I think it was $40,000 a year. And this was back in the 70s. It was a very expensive place. So I said, Dad, look, I'm wasting your money. I don't really know why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing. So I dropped out. And I traveled all around the country. I hitchhiked around the country a couple times. I worked on a fishing boat. I had worked as a house painter. I did all this stuff, right? I was in North Carolina, I was a messenger for a hospital group. I drove x-rays from hospital to hospital. I did all these things. And then one day I wake up and I'm looking around and I said, geez, you know, I'm smarter than this. I really need to be contributing in a way that's different than this, because this isn't going to last. What I'm doing right now is not going to last. So I was always holistically oriented. I mean, I took a transcendental meditation course. I was 11 years old, right? So there was a seed in me all the time since birth, probably before, that just grew as I got older. And interestingly enough, when I was growing up, there was an osteopathic doctor on Nantucket. And his wife was the principal of the high school. It's a small community. He was a great guy. He did osteopathy and craniosacral treatment. He was a dyed-in-the-wool, honest-to-God, structure-and-function osteopathic doctor, and he was great. I had a great relationship with him, and I thought to myself, you know, that's something I could do. I could do that. So, you know, after I sowed my wild oats, I think I was 23 or 24 years old, I went back to college and did 4 years of pre-med. In my 20s, you know, I'm way older than everybody else. So I went to a big university where I wouldn't feel so funny. I went to University of Massachusetts in Amherst, matriculated there from 1984 to 1987 or 1983 to 1987 to do in my pre-med degree, right? Going to be an osteopathic doctor. And December of my senior year, I go to Maine to have an interview at the Biddeford College of Osteopathic Medicine, which is where I wanted to go. And I was naive Pollyanna. I always have been. And I'm sitting down at the interview table and I'm telling everybody how excited I am about doing hands-on, old-fashioned, you know, structure and function osteopathy. And they said, well, that's great, but there aren't that many osteopaths who do that anymore. We teach a little bit of it here. And if you want to get a degree here and a license, you're going to have to be practicing basically allopathic medicine in hospital settings. And my head exploded. And I was in shock. I couldn't believe it because I couldn't do that. I just couldn't do that. I wasn't cut out to do that. I couldn't do that. I just couldn't do it. So long story short, I left the interview. I'm driving home back to college. I don't know, it was about a 4-hour drive and I got really sick and there was a blizzard. So I'm holed up in this hole in the wall motel trying not to, you know, die. I mean, I was really sick. Somehow I made it home and was in bed for the next 2.5 weeks languishing with an illness.
Wow.
I had fever. I had chills. I had abdominal pains. I couldn't keep anything down. I couldn't eat. I was losing weight. I'm getting worse. And I'm in the middle of like Medical Central Massachusetts. I mean, you throw a stick and you hit a doctor's office or a teaching hospital or a medical school or something, right? Thick with allopathic medicine. I went to see a bunch of people, 3 different people, I think. Nobody could help me. I was lucky if someone spent 5 minutes with me. They're throwing antibiotics at me, throwing anti-inflammatories at me, basically, oh, you know, whatever, you'll get over it. It's just a stomach flu. Well, no, it's not. Now, as fate would have it, this was 1987, I think, at this time, there were 2 naturopathic doctors in the entire state of Massachusetts, the entire state. One of them lived in the same town that I lived in. So I was married at the time, and my wife said, look, I've heard about this naturopathic doctor in town. You should probably go see him. And, you know, I didn't know what naturopathy was, had no idea, but I was open-minded and that's been my strength my whole life. So I got nothing to lose. So literally, not figuratively, literally, I'm carried into this guy's office. I'll never forget it. It was on Main Street in Northampton, Massachusetts, up this long flight of stairs, no elevator. I got an arm around two people. They're carrying me up the stairs. I go into the guy's office and I immediately felt at ease. He had a great bedside manner. I'm picture an old fashioned country doctor who knew what he was doing, right? That's what this guy was like. Jim Lemkin was his name. Put me on an exam table, poked around, drew some blood, asked me a bunch of questions, gave me two pellets of homeopathic medicine. I had no idea what homeopathy was, had no idea. Couldn't even spell it. Waited for 5 minutes, nothing happened. He scratched his chin. He took this big book out of a bookshelf. I'll never forget it. I can remember this like it was yesterday. It was a homeopathic index, a repertory. He started paging through it, asked me a bunch of other questions, gave me a different homeopathic medicine, two pellets in my mouth. As soon as that hit my tongue, I felt a thrill go through my body. And I ran to the bathroom and vomited up this bilious sludge. I couldn't believe what came out of my body. Now, he didn't give me an emetic. He didn't give me some purgative. It wasn't intended to do that. And as soon as that stuff left my body, I had the distinct feeling that a Venetian blind had been unrolled from my toes to my head. This thrill went through my body and I was cured. Honest to God, I was cured in 3-4 minutes. I'm carried into the guy's office. I walk out of it, you know, like Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. I go home. I slept for, I think, 20 hours. And I woke up the next day, born again into naturopathy. And, you know, this would have been December. So January, February, January, February, March, April, May, June. So 5-6 months later, I'm a freshman at naturopathic medical school because of that experience, which completely altered my life. And, you know, in retrospect, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. But at the time, it seemed like the worst. It's life is like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, I've always been a big one that you take lemons and make lemonade. And people, you know, I tend to be more of a glass half full person than a glass half empty person. And so I like to look at negative experiences and say, what's my lesson out of this? What am I supposed to learn? Which brings me to my next question for you. How did you end up in Illinois? I mean, Illinois is not the mecca of warmth and fuzziness for naturopathic physicians. And how did you end up in Illinois? And what were some of the things that happened to you in that lovely state?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? And what the underlying message here, or not message, but fact is, most people are completely unaware of. We haven't had a free medical market in the United States since 1912, when under the influence of the Carnegies and the Rockefellers, Congress granted the American Medical Association exclusive control over who could and who couldn't practice medicine. So in 1912, the osteopaths, the naturopaths, the chiropractors, everybody who wasn't an MD was kicked off of the bus of medicine. Kicked off of the bus of medicine. The only people that could legally practice medicine in the United States were MDs. Now, since that time, every other profession, all these other professions that were kicked off of the bus have fought back politically. The osteopaths fought back, the chiropractors fought back, the naturopaths are fighting back. So I graduated medical school, naturopathic medical school, 1991, got my license to practice naturopathy in 1992. At that time, I think there were 6 or 7 states in the United States that licensed and regulated naturopathy, 6 or 7. Now there's 22, right? Which begs the question, well, that's better than 6, but do the laws of medicine change when you cross a state line? I don't think so. It's politics. It's all about politics. So one of the things that it was never expressly said to us as naturopathic students back in the day, but there was a strong kind of push to do this, was if you really want to help the profession, you'll move to an unlicensed state, you'll work beneath the radar, gather support, take it to the legislature and get licensed. That's what a lot of us did. So for half of my career, I've worked in unlicensed states, not, and there's only one state in the U.S. where it's illegal to practice naturopathy. That's Florida, believe it or not. But not legal, not illegal, no license. What are you going to do? So, you know, I'm in Illinois because the best thing that ever happened to me, my wife, Brenda, who I think introduced me to you. That's how we met, through Brenda, way back in the day. Her family and her life was in Illinois. So when I met her and things clicked and I saw the writing on the wall, and it was really great writing on that wall, I moved to Illinois because that's where her life was. And I didn't care, right? I didn't really have any skin in any game anywhere. So I'm going to support my wife. Let's move to Illinois. Why not? So I'm in Illinois, Pollyanna. I got a brick and mortar practice. Things are good. I'm bumping along. Things are going okay. And then I get an order to cease and desist by the Illinois Department of Medicine. And I didn't know that I had gotten the order to cease and desist because they had sent the order to cease and desist to the wrong address. Because for a couple of years, I had an office in downtown Chicago in a high rise. And now I'm in the suburbs, and they sent all the correspondences to the wrong address. I had no idea that there was a complaint, and it wasn't a complaint, but somebody at the comptroller's office saw that there was a naturopath with an Illinois address, and that's against the law. You can't practice naturopathy here. So they said, cease and desist. I never got the order. 3 months later, I get a letter from a collections agency asking me for $5,000. I thought it was a scam. So I tracked it down, and no, it wasn't a scam, because I never showed up for my court date, because I didn't know I had a court date. They found me guilty in absentia and fined me $5,000. Sent that to the wrong address, never got it. Because there was no communication, the state sent it to a collection agency. Collection agency found me perfectly fine, right? So long story short, again, I never paid the fine. But Illinois ordered me to cease and desist because I was practicing naturopathic medicine in Illinois, which was illegal, or not illegal, but there wasn't a license and regulation. Now, as it turns out, in Illinois, the laws are so stringent. And remember, Illinois is the home of the American Medical Association. Downtown Chicago is where the AMA is. In Illinois, you can't tell somebody to eat Cheerios to lower their cholesterol unless you're licensed to do it. You can't do it. It's crazy. So I hightailed it to Minnesota, where I'm licensed and regulated now. My business is domiciled in Minnesota. And I've moved away from brick and mortar to online stuff, and it's all telemedicine now. I treat people all around the world through telemedicine. And again, ironically, one of the best things I've ever did, because my overhead came way, 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 way down.
Seriously. Ooh, baby, I know about that. I mean, I've now got to, got 19 employees in my stick and bricks business in that one. And I got 7 in my other online business. So yeah, I know all about overhead. So Peter, with all of that, not really being licensed, and I get that. And because I really wish that naturopathic physicians were fully licensed in the state of Ohio, because yeah. I'm desperately looking for another physician in my practice. And it doesn't benefit me to hire a naturopath, even though naturopaths are where I'm aligned with philosophically and medically and all that stuff. It just doesn't really happen. So knowing about the backdrop in the contention between allopathic medicine and naturopathic medicine, and even the division inside of naturopathic physician versus naturopath and naturopathy. And I mean, I was involved in that fight for a while, and it was over a name, and nobody wanted to give up their name. And because nobody wanted to give up their name, no progress was made. So why do you stay in the fight? What keeps your passion going about naturopathic medicine in light of the history and in light of what's going on today?
Clinical results. You would believe it, but most people would be hard pressed to believe the things that I've seen people recovered from. And it's not because I'm some medical genius. It's because foundation naturopathic philosophy and treatment strategies are extremely effective. because they're in sync with natural law. And when you see results like I've seen, I mean, not every time. This isn't like guaranteed everybody's going to get cured. It's not like that at all, but it's very effective, very sophisticated, cutting edge, next generation. And when it works, your jaw's on the ground. For instance, this is a guy I golf with. He's 75 years old. He's Italian. He had, his kidneys were starting to fail, right? He'd go once a year, he'd go in for a physical, and his glomerular filtration rate and his BUN would go up and up and up. And it was not good. His kidneys were failing. They told him, oh, and probably in a year, you're going to have to go on dialysis. He came to me. So what do I do? I said, well, you have to change your diet. You have to take these supplements and these botanical medicines. And he said, I'm not going to change my diet. I can't afford the nutritional supplements, but I'll take the botanical medicine. I didn't think it was going to work, but it worked. That was 4 years ago. Once a year, he goes in for a checkup, and every year, right, his numbers get better and better and better. And this last year, which was 2 months ago, he's normal. Saved him from dialysis, right? And, you know, I mean, that's just a really small piece of the pie here, but it's results is what drives me forward. And, you know, I just have a desire to help people, honestly.
Well, at the bottom of that, that's really why physicians are supposed to go into medicine, right?
Yeah, that's right. Right. You would think that, but it's not true. I read an interesting research years ago, and this, I think, when I was in medical school, somebody did a dissertation, a PhD dissertation, or whatever, and they found that in countries where the salary of medical doctors was capped, the majority of people who were medical doctors were women. And in countries where there was no cap, it was the Wild West, you could make as much money as you could, depending on, you know, how good you were, the most people who became doctors were men. Now, the underlying theory here being that most men get into medicine because they want to make money, and most women get into medicine because they want to help people. And so I guess I was the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah, isn't that nice? I mean, it's the way it's supposed to be. And, you know, and some of it is the system itself. You know, I've often said you take the smartest and the brightest and possibly the most compassionate 18-year-old kids who graduate from high school and decide that they, you know, for whatever reason, and there could be a long list of reasons outside of money even, of why they want to go to medical school. So they go to medical school, they spend 4 years, and then they spend another 2 to 8 years in a medical residency and fellowship. So you take these smart, well-meaning high school kids who go, I just want to go into the health. I just want to help people. You know, I just want to get really smart. And I had a grandmother or an aunt or a cousin or somebody that was really sick. And I really want to do that. I want to take care of people. I really want to help people. And then the system grinds them up into hamburger. You know, by the time they go through medical school and then they go through the sleep deprivation and the mental tyranny that happens during your internship residency fellowship program, which most people don't have any idea what that grind is about. You know, there's a thing in the way that you torture people. It's truly torture. You sleep deprive them. You know, like most people who are interns and residents are working, you know, there's 168 hours in a week, and they're usually working 100 to 120 of those hours every single week. So you sleep deprive them, you put them under great stress, and then you tell them the same thing over and over and over and over again to indoctrinate them because their defenses are gridded down, they're tired, they don't think, and they don't have enough energy to argue. So they just accept what they're told. And that's truly a torture technique that they use literally in prison camps. And so by the time you take this bright and well-meaning 18-year-old and you put him through another 10 years of sleep deprivation, indoctrination, and literal torture and all the different things that go on inside of that training, which is just, it's, you know, it's the, they say it's the way you get into the camp. You know, it's like, I went through it, so I'm going to put all those young people through it. And then you end up with more and more tyranny. But by the time you do that, by the time you get to be 28 and you're $400,000 in debt, and maybe you've got a family and you want to have a house, because most of your classmates who went into engineering, or they became, you know, an engineer or a CPA or an accountant, they started making money 8 or 9, you know, years ago, right, behind you, when you've been on a subsistence sort of a salary as an intern and a resident. So now you got to kind of make up on that curve a little bit. So it does become about money at that point. I mean, I had a doctor that I hired, this was a few years ago now, and she worked for me for a couple of years. And she didn't go to medical school until she was older. She had actually had a degree in history and a degree in geography. And when she got out of college, she was working as a bank teller. And she was working in a bank for a few years and then had a few other jobs. And then one day said, you know, I am smarter than all of these people. I can go to medical school. So she went back, instead of going, you know, 22, you graduate from college, you get into medical school usually when you're 22 or 23. She was about 28 when she went back to medical school and went through medical school, did a 3-year family practice residency, and then was out into her practice. And she really wanted to do more holistic medicine, which doctors in this line of work, as you know, they don't make the same money as like oncologists or neurosurgeons or any of those people do. And so she was at the bank one day talking about refinancing her student loans. And what it turned out to be was that she had the 6% interest rate of what these loans were and how far in debt she was. She was going to be 77 years old before she was able to pay her debts in full. And that would be tens of thousands of dollars of accrued interest on top of all that too. And she said, "What? I'm going to have to go back into conventional medicine to make more money just to be able to pay off my debts and to be able to provide for my family." So the system is just horrific. You know, on top of people that really want to do good, they just can't.
And lay people don't understand this.
Exactly.
Right? Lay people have been taught, socialized, for lack of a better word, to believe that their medical doctor knows what's best for them.
And that they make like a zillion dollars doing
it. Right.
And unless you're at the highest echelon of that, you really don't.
You really don't. That's right. I mean, if I told you what I made as in my first 15 years as a naturopath, I was lucky if I made $45,000 a year. And I was really good at what I did. So the whole thing is nuts, right? And by the way, right, the doctoral degree, the PhD, was invented in Germany. And the intention of the PhD program, any doctoral degree program, is not to create free, open-minded thinkers, but it's to make the candidate think inside of a particular box. And if you don't think inside of this particular box, even if you have facts to support your position, you're not going to get your degree, because you're not going to be given the seal of approval by the people who are in charge of the degree. So the intention is to make people close-minded and think inside of a particular way. And that's, they're very successful at doing that. And that's why you are such a rock star, because as you've got a foot firmly in both worlds. I mean, you're an emergency room doc forever, and you're a proponent of holistic medicine. And, you know, maybe there's like 5 other people in the world that are like that. And that's one of the reasons why I'm such a big fan. Yeah. You really are a rare bird, Sherry.
Peter, you have an eclectic view of the world. And every time, and Peter, you and I've been friends for a long time, at least 10 years. And there used to be an event every year held in Illinois called the Health Freedom Expo. That was just every year. It was where all the speakers would get together and we all knew each other. It was like a family reunion amongst holistic practitioners and the top people, the people who were always on the stage and writing books and all that. I really miss those days. And you and I, that was where I think we first met many, many years ago.
I do too.
And we used to go to dinner and have just great conversations. And You have a really, because you're very knowledgeable, you read a lot, and you don't just see, you think very outside the box, which is such a cliche term, but it's really true. When you take a 30,000 foot view of the world and just stand back and look across all of the things that are going on, not just in healthcare, but just across the world, what do you think is the biggest problem in the world today?
Well, I think there's the biggest problem is that there's four or five families that control everything. They've got all the money and they're running the show. And people don't know that that's happening. And we're just like puppets on a string, dancing to the tune of whatever the puppet masters say, because they've got all the money, they've got all the power, they've got all the influence, they've got all the propaganda. And they do. I mean, they were able to get Trump out of office, for goodness sakes. By the way, Trump won. By the way, newsflash, Trump won, but they were able to eject him because they didn't like him. And things weren't going the way that they wanted it to. And that's the problem. I mean, think what we need here, and I don't know if it's going to happen, is, you know, a conscious awakening of everybody in the world, because ironically, it's the people in the world who have the power. And it's power by numbers. It's the people that are running the show are in the extreme minority. And if there is a shift in consciousness, which I think is the only thing that's going to make a difference here, then maybe we stand a fighting chance of seeing, you know, a free and just and fair society across the board. I don't know. That's really kind of utopian. But I will tell you what we need right now in the U.S., and we floated this idea to the Trump campaign when he was in office. We need a free medical market, because people aren't aware that the FDA and the FTC and the AMA control everything. And says who? In the United States of America, the only thing that can treat a disease is a drug. Well, says who? Pharmaceutical industry, that's who. If I discovered that buttercups cured liver cancer, the pharmaceutical industry, the AMA, would make buttercup medicine illegal. You couldn't grow buttercups. You couldn't make the medicine, right? Like marijuana used to be, like, you know, moonshine used to be. The only people that can make it are the pharmaceutical industry, and then they turn around and charge you $1,000 a pill for it. And that's a shame. And the people that are regulating medicine work for the pharmaceutical, in the government level, work for the pharmaceutical industry, the place that they're regulating when they leave the government. It's a circular revolving door, and it's wrong. We need a branch of, we need the federal government to create a federal department of holistic medicine, which oversees osteopathy, naturopathy, botanical medicine, acupuncture, oversees all of it, regulates it, because the people who are regulating it now work for the other side. And it's, you know, it's the fox guarding the hen house, but it's happened for so long. I mean, it started in 1912 before anybody was alive. Now, people don't understand that this exists. It's the biggest problem in medicine in the United States, and it's hiding in plain sight, is the monopolization of the medical marketplace by the AMA and Big Pharma.
Well, I believe, though, it's more than just in the U.S. It's the global extension. I mean, you think about this whole mandatory COVID shot injection fraud thing that's happening. That's really, when you think backwards over the last 15 months, what was actually this whole scam-demic thing was designed to drive people in down the chute to make sure you get injected along the way. And
poison
they've
poke,
tried
yeah.
Poison poke, exactly. And they have, they've been using both approaches to find out which is working better, the carrot or the stick. You know, yep. The carrot, sign up, you get your shot. You can sign up for a chance to win a $1 million lottery. You can sign up for an opportunity to get a 4-year college education for free. You can go to sporting events and not have to wear a mask. I mean, that's the carrot. The stick is you won't be able to fly. You won't be able to renew your driver's license. You won't be able to have a job. And so they're kind of seeing what's sort of happening along those ways, the tyrannical approach. They've already started implementing this across Europe. If you don't get a shot, you can't cross across a country borders and country lines. The airlines in Pakistan came out a couple of days ago. Air Pakistan said you absolutely cannot get on a plane if you've not, don't have proof of vaccination. Where is this going to stop, Peter? Where do you see it stop, and why aren't people revolting?
It's a very, very good question. I mean, why didn't anybody get on Noah's Ark, right? Right. I don't know. The answer is I don't know, but I think that one of the things that makes the United States different than any place else in the world is that the United States, of course, you know, historically was built on, you know, don't tread on me, independent thinking. So I think that if there's any country in the world that's going to lead the way towards health freedom and, you know, health truth and coronavirus myth busting, it's the United States. And you see more and more of this. I mean, you and I have been speaking out about this from day one. I mean, day one, we've been being deplatformed and censored since day one. And the information that we were saying a year ago is still pertinent and true today. It hasn't changed because, you know, facts are a stubborn thing. But more and more people are starting to speak up here in the U.S. And I think that that's going to reach a boiling point. You know, I hope it doesn't come to armed insurrection, but it might if they push us too far.
Well, now that they are rolling out this plan, excuse me, they're rolling out this plan to go door to door to start making sure that you've had your shot. I mean, have you noticed that in the last couple of months, you know, time is so compressed? I mean, we've been talking about this. It's been, I mean, think about it, Dr. Glidden. We've only started injecting these shots, the Johnson & Johnson and the Moderna shot, 8 months ago. It was December of 2020. And the J&J shot came out in February of this year. It's been 5 months. But you would think with the global push and all the conversations about this, it's been going on for several years. You know, sometimes I find myself saying things like, you know, the other day I was talking about blah, blah, blah. And I went, oh, that was yesterday.
Yeah, right.
It seems like right. It's rolled out. But that we are now talking about door-to-door injecting people. Nobody's talking anymore about getting sick or having COVID and in the hospital and ventilators and intensive care. Nobody talks about that. They just talk about, have you had your shot? Did you get your shot? And the peer pressure and all of these additional things that are happening about the shot. I mean, I really have a concern. And as you know, you've probably heard some of my interviews. They have 160 COVID shots, COVID vaccines in the developmental pipeline. There are 93 currently ready to roll out. I felt like this was a layered approach to genetic disruption and to the disruption and decimation of the human race. I mean, why would we ever need 160 shots for the same supposed virus unless it was a layered approach to make everybody sick?
There has to be some agenda there. There has to be something going on here because, you know, if it looks like a duck and flies like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. The simple fact of the matter is that this type of intervention, this type of vaccine intervention has never even been considered ever before for any illness, not even polio, for goodness sakes. And which begs the question, well, why are they doing it here and now for this? I mean, you know, I'm in a network of licensed naturopathic doctors who really practice naturopathic medicine. And none of my colleagues have had a patient die from COVID. Very few have even needed to be hospitalized. But homeopathy and naturopathic therapeutics for prevention and for treatment are far superior for this than any vaccine could even hope to be. But this information is ignored. And why? Well, there's an agenda here. And, you know, if you take it to the extreme, then they have to be attempting some type of manipulation of the physiology of the human being. And I don't know what that is. But it, whatever it is, it ain't going to be good.
Well, as we're winding down our deep dive conversation here, Peter, what sort of words of wisdom, what would you like to offer our listeners as a as an important takeaway? Because you have a lot of wisdom and a lot of knowledge to share. What would you like them to, what words of advice would you like them to have as we close out here this morning?
Well, the only thing that I want to encourage people to do is those of us who are in the know here, right? It's like the fella said, when you've seen the truth, when you've experienced the truth, no explanation is necessary. When you haven't seen the truth, no explanation will suffice, right? So you either have a clue here that this is a propagandized illness, that the vaccines are bad, they're not good, and that there are in fact other ways that you can employ to make yourself healthy. But you need to educate yourself about those, and you need to maintain your contact with the community of like-minded people. Because the majority of people in the world don't know, they can't even tell you what a virus is, for goodness sakes, but they are going to attempt to shame you into getting a vaccine that has more possibility of hurting you than it ever could help you, right? This is the culture, the crazy culture that we live in. So we have to stick together now more than ever. Stick together now more than ever and educate yourself. So double down on your support of Sherry Tenpenny. Tell everybody in your church, everybody in your community, everybody in your golf club, everybody in whatever about what she's up to. And, you know, what I'm up to. Because we need to solidify the base here. We need to stick together. It's like Benjamin Franklin said, my second cousin, six times removed, by the way, name drop, we must all hang together, or most assuredly, we will hang alone. Stick together here, educate yourself, and don't be afraid to open your mouth and spread the word about the truth of things.
That's brilliant, Peter. And thank you so much. Tell people where they can find you, follow you, get your books, become a patient of yours because you do all things with telemedicine. Tell people where they can find you, follow you, listen to your good information.
Thanks, Dr. T. So my last name is Glidden, like the paint. Glidden paint, no relation, by the way. So just do drglidden.com, either D-R or spell it out, D-O-C-T-O-R. drglidden.com. That's where all my information lives. I've got a ton of information there that can help you. I have a special, by the way. I have a four-day special for followers of Dr. Tenpenny. So check it out.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And I am going to spell it out. It's Dr. Glidden, G-L-I-D-D-E-N, because I think that's important for people to know. You know, most people in America don't even spell anything correctly these days. So we need to spell it out for them. Make sure that they're getting to the right place. Dr. Glidden, G-L-I-D-D-E-N.com. So thank you so much, Dr. Peter Glidden, for joining us this morning and your candid disclosures. You know, I've known you for 10 years and I've learned a lot about you this morning that I didn't know. So how interesting is that? I'm both grateful and honored to learn so many things. And I'm sure that our listeners feel the same. And I want to give a special shout out and thank you to our premium members. It's your monthly support that helps to make my work and the work of my team possible. And so that's very important. You can find all of our educational links, everything that we do, including our boot camp, which we are going to do another boot camp this fall, and all of our online offerings just by going to drtenpenny.com. It's Dr. no period, Tenpenny, T-E-N-P-E-N-N-Y.com. Hover over the navigation bar and you can find a whole lot of goodies and things there that for your educational growth and experience. And while you're there, please spend an extra minute or two just to sign up for our email on that email slot, because the powers that be, the censorship is taking us down off of all platforms. And they're even talking about taking away our email list. So in the meantime, that's the way that we can stay connection. And with that, I always close all of my live broadcasts and interviews out with a word from God, which is one of my favorite verses in the Bible, Romans 12:12, rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we meet again on our next broadcast, stay strong, stay in prayer, lean into God. He'll never let you down. We'll see you next week. Peter, thank you again so much for joining us here this morning. and we'll see you around online. Take care.